The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound. Like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to BS Report, an emotional day. My friend Adam Carolla in the video podcast studio, the BS Report headquarters.
Great to be here, Bill.
Now we can stare at each other. There's cameras taping us.
Yeah.
We can cut little clips out of it.
I miss your gardener with his leaf blower.
I know.
Can you get him through here?
Yeah, I thought about having him just kind of walk behind you, like blowing leaves on you. But
yeah, because when I used to do the old podcast, I'd say, what time's good for you? And Bill would go, hold on a second. Jaime, what time are you coming by with the leaf blower? And he'd be like, noon. And then Bill would go, how about noonish?
That's true. I can't deny it. We have a lot to catch up on. I haven't had you on the pod in a while, but we should mention you have your own podcast that you've been
doing
for three plus years now.
Yeah, at least, or coming up on three. Yeah, AdamCarolla.com. New app out.
New app? You have a new app?
Well, we have a app.
You have an app.
We have an app, and we have a new website, and basically like this. If you like Bill Simmons, if you listen to Bill Simmons, if you laugh at Bill Simmons, you'll dig Adam Carolla.
Oh.
That's my thing.
All right. So it almost
I think we have like the same core audience.
When you buy an Amazon.com book and it recommends other books,
right.
If you like this, you may have liked.
Right.
Man, that's interesting. Do you feel like there's getting to the point where there's too many podcasts now? I mean, I think we're okay because we're in early enough that kind of established foothold. But now it seems like everybody has a podcast. Like even Alec Baldwin has a podcast.
He's nuts, Baldwin. I mean, he called my podcast in the middle of the podcast the other night. We just tweeted out relationship questions, and I was talking to some guy from New Zealand.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was like, oh, Alec Baldwin's on the line, and he wanted to talk for 45 minutes. I think he just sits on the internet and looks for his name and then calls in places and freaks people out.
Or he writes like Huffington Post columns. Or it does seem like he has like more free time than he should, considering he's like a star of a sitcom and has a bunch of stuff. He makes movies.
Yeah, he's got he is one of these guys that is he has a he has like some sort of pack in his gullet that creates power, some sort of energy source that like captures sunlight and converts it into calories or something. Hmm. Speaking of calories, he's lost like 30 pounds.
Really?
Well, that's what he told me. I told him he looked thinner. He said he lost 30 pounds.
He was getting a little hefty.
He was, and I told him I wanted him to keep going, grow a full beard, and run for president.
That would be interesting.
Picture like a super husky Alec Baldwin, like a 335-pound Alec Baldwin. Like an old-time, you know, vest, pocket watch, full beard.
That was always your theory, that we should just hire somebody that looks like that as our president.
And I think didn't a lot have of these countries decisions we're dealing with are stupid, and if they see a skinny guy,
yeah,
they think they could beat us.
Yeah.
They don't realize there's something called an army.
Right.
Behind the skinny guy who will beat you. They're not into that. So they see a guy with a weak, limp handshake or skinny guy or spindly guy.
Right.
And I always said we should take Baldwin and we should put him on the creatine and really just beef him up and have the full beard. And he would end every conversation with, I said good day. And he would leave. He would check his pocket watch. He would say he's growing weary of this conversation. And then he would say good day and storm out.
So they would just prep him for the meetings. Be like, look, this guy's going to say this. You're going to counter with this. And then at some point, you're going to raise your voice.
And I would say, listen, we have to raise you like veal. We have to keep packing on the pounds.
Yeah.
So we can't have you exercise. But I will have a tennis ball in your right hand, and you'll constantly be squeezing it. So you have a monster grip, you know, Steve Garvey-esque grip.
So one of those
you know?
Handshakes where you actually get mad at the other person because they shook your hand so hard.
Right.
It's like he was trying to hurt you.
So you picture Baldwin in a turn-of-the-century, you know, vest, pinstripe suit with the pocket watch and the full beard with some gray around the temples, 325 pounds, and he's meeting the leader of North Korea. and he shakes his hand and almost crushes it.
And the guy's just intimidated.
Right. It just scares the crap out of everyone in the world.
Wouldn't this be like kind of the a sequel to Dave or something where it may be almost like where Alec Baldwin plays himself.
Yeah.
And it's somebody like some political party decides, well, we're going to have you run as president. We'll tell you what to say. There's going to be somebody pulling the strings.
Right.
And you're just going to be Alec Baldwin and just be the man. And
yes.
I would watch that movie, I feel like.
I'd watch that, too.
And then he realizes that, much like Dave 18 years ago, he realizes that he's kind of living a lie. And but, this wasn't what he wanted. He wants to make his own decisions. And then that person who's pulling the strings is like, no, I make the call. And they have that whole thing.
But, yeah, he finds his...
Yeah.
He reunites with his daughter. He finds his humanity.
Right.
But here's the thing. Baldwin, sadly, has gone the other direction. He's lost a bunch of weight.
Hmm.
And he just told me he stopped eating sugar. And then that was it. But then I said, it's the worst thing ever because... There's two things you can't do in show business. You can't get fat,
yeah,
and you can't get drunk. Like, you'll ruin your career if you get into booze or substances or whatever, or if you get fat, or sadly, both, which happens
sometimes. Things go together, yeah.
Sometimes. And everything in show business is nothing but biscuits and cookies and M&Ms, and every gift basket is either cookies or booze, or both. It's a weird message. Like, isn't that kind of a weird message to send? Like, if you go onto the set of 30 Rock, there will be craft service. And craft service will just have piles and piles and piles of M&Ms and piles of, you know, deep fried this. And there'll be a chick who walks around with a tray with smoothies on it and, you know, little things of macaroni and cheese that have been baked twice with breadcrumbs on it. And like, it's like they're trying to fatten you up like you're a turkey and Thanksgiving is coming up. But on the other hand, it'll ruin your career if you get fat. So when you go on a set, you have to just sit there and stare at all this great food constantly, and you just have to go like, not going to eat it. But you can't help it. There's someone following you around, like trying to stuff food down your throat.
Would you say that it's almost like they're trapped in the 1970s, these craft service tables? A little like, when was the last time you went to a tuxedo shop?
High school. I think my prom.
Oh, it's been that long?
Yeah, I think so.
Weren't you in Mike August's wedding?
Yeah, but I had he provided the tie. And I brought the suit.
I went to a tuxedo shop. We got 30 for 30, got nominated for an Emmy, and the Emmys was last month, and we went, or 2 months ago, and we went, I had to rent a tux, and I hadn't rented a tux forever. And I looked around, finally found this place on like the corner of La Brea and Wilshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I go in, it was one of those things where you go in, and it's like in Field of Dreams when Kevin Costner takes a walk in Burt Lancaster's hometown and it suddenly turns into 1973.
Yeah.
That's the tuxedo shop. It's like the same pictures.
Yeah.
It's the same tuxes.
Same guy.
Smells the same. Same guy. They're always like 80.
Yeah.
They always have like a slight accent.
And the pictures are all sort of 1985.
Right.
Sort of, you could almost hear Duran Duran when you look at them. And I have the same way with my barber.
Barber shops are another one. They've never changed.
They just have pictures of models from the 80s.
Yeah. It's like the Playboy with Jane Kennedy.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Jane Kennedy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's certain things that are just in a time warp, and I think craft service tables are one of those time warp things where nobody's ever said, hey, what if we had wraps instead of sandwiches? Yeah. No.
No, the
bread's easier.
They're just trying to fatten up everybody, including the crew, or maybe they're trying to kill the crew, but if you are there and you have nothing to do, like you do lots of times in between takes and shoots and stuff like that, you just pace around and all you want to do is eat.
Right.
So anyway, somehow Baldwin has figured out a way to steer clear of the sugar, and that's it. And you know, everyone writes a diet book.
Well, you lost, how much weight did you lose when you did Dancing with the Stars? You lost like 20 pounds, right?
No, probably only 10 or 15 or something. Yeah, maybe 10, 15 pounds.
You just got skinny when you did the Hammer, too.
Well,
I remember you passing up like pizza and stuff and being like disappointed in you.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Dieting sucks. You know, it's just a weird thing where it's like, I have no training for it because I grew up hungry, like literally hungry, not like hungry,
literally
for
hungry,
like just hungry. And then I used to be a carpenter and a boxing coach. So it's like I couldn't put on a pound if I tried because all I did all day was like swing a hammer and then teach boxing, and I could eat whatever I wanted. And then I got into radio, and all of a sudden, me and Kimmel were going out for brunch every day at Mexican places, and all of a sudden, just packed on 20 pounds.
You know what was terrible for food was the Kimmel.
Yeah.
Working on that show, because we used to have these big lunches, and they're always catered by, like, Bay City Subs or pizza places.
Yeah.
And we would all eat, and just we'd stuff our faces, and then we would go to write jokes.
Yeah.
And I would be exhausted. I'd be like, ready to take a nap. It would be Thanksgiving. You just want to, like, sit in a chair. And
your proclamation that Chinese food is not funny and it makes you tired.
Right.
You got Chinese food successfully removed from the menu of Kimmel.
Oh, remember that? Removed, yeah, that was a big coup d'etat.
Still removed to this day. Your legacy lives on.
I had a whole thing. I was like, every time we have Chinese food, we all just were in a coma for 2 hours after. We're supposed to be like writing jokes.
Right.
Even you couldn't write jokes.
You
were like
that.
A joke.
I still never forgave you for removing Chinese food. Like, I remember it was like, Bill was like, hey, Jimmy, Chinese food makes you tired. We got to pull off the menu. And Jimmy's like, he's right. And then I was like, what happened to the Chinese food? And now Chinese food was gone, and it's still gone. You should go back and reinstitute Chinese
Maybe
food.
I should.
It's been long enough.
I should go back and say, look, once a month we should do that. Yeah, it was weird, because Kimmel would either go, he would have to disagree with you no matter what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, President Obama is biracial. No, he's not. Like, he would just, even if the facts were against him, he would stick to it.
Oh, I've had some classics with him.
But sometimes he would just back you. In the Chinese food thing, he just took it and ran with it.
I know. Everyone else was pissed because we wanted Chinese food.
I started eating healthy about 2 months ago because my wife, who, you know, I'm a terrible husband, as you are. I think very rarely very rarely. We're not exactly the take one for the team's husbands.
Well,
I think we're difficult marriages.
We're terrible by American standards. Internationally,
we
fall somewhere around the middle of the pack.
You and I both have the same.
If it was international.
If we were in France or something, I think we'd be good husbands.
Yeah, or you know,
Germany.
There's Guatemala, I mean, Middle East, I mean, there's lots of parts, you know.
Good point, good point.
Mm-hmm.
But I think both of us use the same defense of, look, you knew how I was when you decided to get married to me.
Right.
This shouldn't be a shock that I can be selfish from time to time, or that I'm going to want to watch football for 10 hours. And they don't really have a defense for that.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
yeah,
I guess the defense would be why I thought you'd eventually change it. Like, but
it's like
I told you,
when you buy a car and it says as is, no warranty.
Right.
That you just got to know. That's like my wife does a lot of that too. Like where my kids are talking and she goes, I know you're tuned out right now. And I go, yeah, thanks for telling them, sweetheart. They're five. They didn't know I was tuned out. Yes, of course I'm tuned out. They're five. You know, they're sitting there talking to me about, you know, and then Anakin Skywalker said, and they're talking to me about kids they go to school with whose names I don't recognize.
Yeah, you just have
and
to
And then
nod.
Tim said to me, and then I got a Lego. Yeah, of course I'm tuned out. We're talking about nothing.
I'm just
now,
nodding and smiling.
You just let them know I was tuned out. By the way, I need my brain freed up to think of ways to make money, sweetheart.
Yeah.
So you should hope that I'm tuned out during 90% of these conversations.
It's a good comeback.
Right.
So occasionally I take one for the team, and right around Labor Day, she wanted to do this like cleanse thing where you just drink these drinks for 5 days.
I know.
So for 5 days we had to drink these disgusting drinks.
Mm-hmm.
And I never want to do stuff like that because I'm always afraid it's going to like mess with like won't be able to write.
Mm-hmm.
So the one thing I was like, I'm not giving up coffee. Like, tell this company to F off. Like, there's no scenario where I give up coffee. It's the highlight of my day every morning, the big coffee I have.
Not worth getting
up. I will
up
never
otherwise.
Give that up. I'd rather just be fat and die.
Mm-hmm.
So we do these drinks. First day, it was like doing heroin. Like, it just, my brain is just scrambled. Second day, just have a pounding headache the whole day. And I'm like, this is terrible. Like, you know, I had a football comm due on Friday. I couldn't even type.
Is this like the honey and the cayenne pepper stuff?
No, it was just drinks. It was like, you know, cucumber beet drink. And vegetable drinks, basically,
right.
And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
By Wednesday, all of a sudden, I felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And then by Thursday, I felt really good. And my brain felt clear. I was, like, sleeping better.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, I kind of, like, took a look at everything I was eating, and it was, like,
Yeah,
I have a giant coffee. I usually have like two Cokes.
Mm-hmm.
I eat a lot of bread. I love potato chips. I love pretzels, sandwiches, you know, heavy lunch.
Yeah. All the stuff.
Candy.
All the good stuff.
No problem eating at 10 o'clock. Why not?
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, I'll just stop for a week. And then once you get used to it and your brain kind of feels like it has no options.
Yeah.
Like lunch is going to suck today. I'm having a salad.
Yeah. Well, all right.
But once you pass that point, you're there.
All right. I'm fine with that, but don't start in with, like, the mini triathlons and stuff like that.
No.
That's where I got to draw the line.
Never.
And by the way, the whole point about a triathlon is the maxi part of a triathlon. Like, when people, my assistant said, I'm doing a mini triathlon. And it's like, well, how does that work? I go, well, you swim like a half mile, and then you ride like 7 miles, and then you jog like 400 feet. And it's like,
right.
All right, well, so what? At that point, you know what I mean?
You jog 400 feet.
Well, I mean, either do iron. Here's what I'm saying is, like, it started as 10K.
Yep.
And then it went to a 10K run walk. And then it went to a 10K run walk ride.
Yeah.
And then it went to a 5K and then a 5K walk ride. And eventually, you just pretty much go to your mailbox and back and raise money for testicular cancer. And so what? You know, I mean, at a certain point, the whole point of a marathon is a marathon. If you're running a half marathon or a mini marathon, you ain't running a marathon.
No. And also, I'm fine with shutting off the traffic and making it impossible to get around whatever city you're living in because you're having like a real marathon. Or like, oh, it's this year's L.A. marathon.
Right.
That's fine.
Right.
If you're making it so that it took an extra hour to get to my house because you were having a half triathlon,
right?
That's when I just want to drive through the yellow things and just start running people over.
And also this thing where it's like you have to prove something to yourself.
Yeah.
And here's how you prove something to yourself. Go back to your crappy apartment and see how many push-ups you can do in your living room.
Mm.
Don't tell me about it. You're proving it to yourself.
Yeah. Congratulations.
You know what I mean?
Keep it
up. If you cannot cover this distance in less than a respectable time, you're out. Like this thing where it's like,
it takes
me
5 hours to run the marathon?
Yeah. Oh, it's 11 hours. I mean, to keep the city closed down for the whole day.
Interesting. It's a 5-hour mark. You just have to stop. That's it. You're done.
Well, because who cares? I mean, you will walk 26 point whatever miles over the course of what? 3 months?
Yeah.
So you've covered a marathon? You didn't do a marathon.
That was
There's a time. There has to be a time.
That was one of the highlights of the best things I ever did as a friend was my buddy Blue Boy was running the marathon once in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's house was like on the 19th or 20th mile or something, and people would always gather and watch it. So when they were running by, we had all this food, and we were like, what are you guys doing? Come eat with us. He's like, yeah, good call. And just stopped. And that was
really?
It. It was chicken beer and sandwiches.
Came in and
like
ate.
A minute later. There's also a picture of my wife ran it once. There's a picture of me greeting her as she stopped and I'm eating a roast beef sandwich. She's like covered in sweat and probably.
Yeah.
Also, like, if you're doing something athletically that involves where people crap on themselves to finish.
Yeah.
Might need to reevaluate that whole thing a tiny bit. Just
here's
a little
the whole
bit.
Thing about marathoners, too. The chicks never look any better than any other chick. As a matter of fact, they look sort of haggard normally, like they're all emaciated and they just look like they're falling apart. And it can't be good. It's never a good thing. Like,
oh, you mean like the champion marathoners?
The people that are addicted to running.
Yeah.
And somehow these people are insane. You know, the people go like, I do 11 miles every day.
I get up at five.
I do 11 miles. And we always tip our cap to them as a society, like, wow, that guy's a better man than I. That guy's nuts and unemployable. And his arches are falling and he's had a hip replacement. It's not good for your body.
Also, Jim Fix died of a heart attack, which everybody overlooks.
Right.
Like, and, running's healthy. But
and
Jim Fix died.
They do this thing. By the way, he wrote a book about running.
Yeah, he became Mr. Marathon because he wrote one book.
What is else to do? Here's how you tie your shoes. Now get going.
Like, I would argue that Rocky Balboa did more for running than Jim Fix.
Certainly upstairs.
The training scenes in Rocky I in 1976. I felt like that started the whole running thing more than anybody. Everybody's, Rocky ran. I'm going to start running.
Right. Yeah. And always looking, waiting, because every time I break into a jog, I'm always like, where are the kids? Where are the neighborhood kids? How come none of them are gathering behind me and cheering me on? It's always a disappointment.
Rocky started, you look back at Rocky now, he predicted Mike Tyson with Clubber Lang.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
started the running craze. He ended the Cold War.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. What else did he do?
He pretty much pioneered the get to the top of the staircase and shadow box thing,
which
everyone does now. I just get, every time I get home, I only have four stairs between where I park my car, but I still get to my entry hall, and it's like I'm throwing punches
in
the air.
I also think he started the sports movie montage, because Rocky III was basically a montage in the beginning of all the fights, and that had never happened in a sports movie.
Right.
The Eye of the Tiger thing.
I like...
We're talking about Rocky out there.
I like a movie where they get so deep into the series that the first half of the movie is the last half of the movie that came before it.
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be a producer's dream.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I got good news on the budget. What? We don't have to make the first 40 minutes of the movie. It'll be the last 40 minutes of the last movie. Wow, that is a money saver.
I railed on this for years, and finally somebody listened to me. When they do those movie marathons,
mm-hmm.
and they would show Rocky 1, and it would immediately lead into Rocky 2.
Mm-hmm.
But then Rocky 2 is the beginning of Rocky 1.
Right.
And they would just show that again. So if you watch the marathon, I was like, can we cut?
Can we cut
the end?
You're correct.
Thank you.
Under white guy problems, rich white guy problems, with nothing else to complain about or do, I had a conversation with a dad, a serious conversation with a dad, trick-or-treating the other night, another rich white guy from the neighborhood, where he's like, my kids are about ready to start watching the Star Wars series.
Mm.
But there's a big debate at the house of whether to start chronologically with the first Star Wars, or should we go with order with the prequel and show, because we don't want to scar the kids. And I
had the ultimate rich white guy. What do you call it? What's it called?
I don't know.
White guy problems?
It's just rich white guy problems. Yeah.
I think you could just call it white guy problems.
It is. Yeah. White guy.
I had, I was redoing those TVs mm-hmm. in the little office because mm-hmm. it's been 3 years. I think you get it every 3 years. You
sure.
Technology is too good now.
Right.
And I had this 65-inch TV that I got from Panasonic. And guys put it up. They soup everything up. TV's defective.
Right.
So now I have to spend like an hour and 20 minutes on the phone with people getting another part and all that. Like that,
right.
there's no more white guy problem than that. Like it's genuinely upsetting. It's like I was so excited these were going up today.
Yeah.
And then you think of it in the big scheme of things, it's like I'm an a-hole.
Well, you're... And also, you have to watch your 42-inch TVs and have to get by with your 42-inch TVs.
Yeah, put the 42-inch in there. I'll suffer through it.
I know, but you get used to it, and then that's it.
Do your thing about how there's never been a better time to be poor.
Well, first off, when we were poor, like, you knew who was poor.
Yeah.
Like, Leonardo DiCaprio drives a Prius, and so does a receptionist now.
Good point.
You know what I mean? Like, there used to be, that guy's driving a Stutz Bearcat, and it's covered in gold plating.
Or
like
he's got a driver or something.
Yeah. Mark Cuban is, he wears cargo shorts and a Mavericks t-shirt and flip-flops everywhere. Like, you can dress like Mark Cuban. This whole thing, I mean... Like, you take something like a Ford Focus, it's like $12,000 for that car.
Yeah.
Or a Mini Cooper, it's like $15,000 for that car. There's a whole bunch of cars. Nissan Versa, where I was looking at there, it's like $13,000. Like, there's a whole bunch of cars that are like $13,000 that have nav and Bluetooth and interlink systems and iPod docks and all this kind of stuff. They get 40 miles to the gallon, 100,000 mile warranties, freezing cold air blasting out with the air conditioning, Bose 8-speaker system in there. Like everything works, number one. So you can drive a car that is better than driving your stepdad's 911 SC from 1977. Like, it's a ton more car than his Porsche was. Better performance, better handling, safer, better everything. Big warranty, don't have to go get it tuned up all the time. You can watch your 42-inch plasma for $600 in high def.
There's
32-inch bucks.
At Best Buy, there are 32-inch HD plasmas for sale for like $300.
You can get your Blu-ray for $19.
Yeah.
Like, you can live in an apartment, have your flat screen TV with your Blu-ray and your little mini surround sound system.
You have a pretty nice cell phone.
You have good cell phone.
Nice laptop.
You have your tablet or whatever. Yeah. I mean, your cell phone, whatever. I don't know what, here's the point. There used to be, hey, this guy's rich and that guy's poor, and thus his car's 10 times better, his clothing is 10 times better, his technology is 10 times better. Now, I got my maid, every time I walk into the kitchen, she's on her cell phone. I want to slap it out of her hand. I'm like, hey.
You're on the clock.
You're on the clock, number one. By the way, do you ever get into this with the weird maid home invasion thing? I moved my maid.
You moved her where?
I moved her out of the kitchen.
Oh. Because she just was set up shop?
Well, there's this thing, and I never was used to this. So I grew up poor, and the only one in the house was like either my mom or my dad, and then they got divorced, and you know, there's no one around. And right. It was just, you'd wander around and just kind of fend for yourself.
Yeah.
And now...
tons of masturbating.
I come down this... yeah, well, this that came later, but
oh,
yeah.
Oh, sorry.
But it's never stopped. But I would come down I'll come down the stairs in my bathrobe, and you know, speaking of masturbating, you know, with a little something left over from the sleep, a little tumescent from whatever I was
right.
dreaming about.
Of course.
Yeah, and I come walking down the stairs, and there's a Guatemalan chick that's standing in my kitchen on her cell phone, you know? And you don't realize between the guy who's setting up your computer, you got your computer guy, you got your nanny, you got your maid, you got your, you know, rich white guy problems. But what I'm saying is there's a bunch of strangers walking around my house all day, and it's weird because I don't know them, and I don't know what to, you know, I mean, I know you have to be cordial and you have to say hi and stuff, but I told my wife the other day, get her started somewhere else. I don't want her in the kitchen. She's like, she literally surrounded the coffee pot with glasses the other day. She was like unloading the dishwasher and she was protecting the coffee pot like a goalie. And I like, you know, you do that thing where you come in and you got your bathrobe on. You know, in the morning when you're just in no mood.
I'm not friendly in the morning.
In the morning either. And you come in and she's on the cell phone and it's a telenovela and she's arguing in Spanish with somebody and she's like blocking the thing and you're like, why is this the first thing I'm seeing in the morning? And my wife's like, well, that's where she starts. I'm like, well, have her start in the living room.
Start in the guest room.
And start in the guest room. And then we won't have to deal with the, and then the other day I'm sitting in my office and I'm on the computer and she's running the vacuum cleaner by my feet. And again, I do that rich white guy problem thing where I have to lift my feet up when I'm pissed about it. Like, man, can't you vacuum some other time? But there are people all over my house now.
Mm.
And I don't know what to do.
Rich white guy problems.
Rich white guy problems.
That's tough. I'm feeling for you.
You feel?
They can't guard the coffee pot like a hockey goalie. Like,
it's
that's
just
something
a
you
weird...
just gotta settle.
She always starts in the kitchen, and then she goes from the kitchen to my bathroom. Mm. And then when I come around to the bathroom, she's in there and's got everything all whacked out.
Inability to differentiate rich people and poor people. I think the rich people have taken it a step further. I wrote about this like a year ago, that the people that just wear pajamas in public.
Yeah. Well, now
they're just making a statement like, I didn't even need to put on clothes. I'm so rich. I just put these on and here I am.
There's nothing. It also used to be like, that guy's rich. He drives a BMW. Remember, like, that guy's a BMW?
The Rolls was always a big one.
Yeah, but it still is. Mercedes and BMW used to mean something. Now it's just everyone makes something.
We should talk
everyone about
what's happening with these luxury cars, because you're a big car guy.
Sure,
like, now these companies are doing, they're making these cars, and it's basically like there's 10 of them, and they cost $3 million apiece.
Yeah.
You're going to get that money, too.
Like, no,
I wonder,
I know.
Like, is that where luxury cars are going to go, where people are just producing
it's usually the exotic performance cars, because
right.
they have supercars and now they have hypercars, and they make, you know, 8 examples and of the Zonda, whatever, and they're all and then, you know, it's always that thing where someone goes, who would pay $2 million for a car?
Floyd Mayweather.
They're pre-sold.
Yeah, they're gone. There's no chance.
That Vegas Rolls dealership, when they see Floyd Mayweather pulling up, they got to be, oh, this is so awesome.
And there's nowhere. It's funny because you always talk about how vintage cars are actually good investments because they don't go down.
Right.
There's no worse investment than a new car.
No.
The minute you buy it, it goes, it costs half as much as it did when you bought it.
It's insane. I mean, Rolls Royces, even Ferraris, Aston Martin, whatever. You can buy a used version of a $250,000 car with almost no miles on it that's like 3 years old for like $80,000.
Right.
And so why, and they, and sometimes they don't even change the body style. So why not just buy a used Rolls Royce that's 3 years old with 8,000 miles on it that some podiatrist owned in Palm Springs? What's the difference?
You know, this is why we're having the NBA lockout.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys all paid sticker price. These net, this last generation of owners, like the last since maybe 1999 and on, they paid full sticker price for their teams.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, back in the day, it was owned by these guys, like these mom and pop guys, and
right.
these people who bought in the league before it took off. Now, these guys paid $450 million or whatever for their teams.
Right.
That was the sticker price, but the team wasn't actually worth that. That's just what they wanted to pay to own the team.
Even the Dodgers sold for like 400 something million bucks, like in like 03. I don't know when the McCourts.
The guy, he's going to make money.
Thing.
He's going to make
sell
money
for $1 billion now. And here's all I want from the new owner. I don't really care about the uniforms or the team or even safety.
Well, you can't touch the uniforms.
Not interested in any of that stuff. But I don't care about heightened security or Giants fans. I'm not interested in changing anything. They're doing a fine job. They got more security, all that good stuff. Someone needs to dump the Dodger dog. It is the worst. It's not the worst hot dog. And this should be a topic for one of your reports, which is worst dog in which park. And I would claim that the Dodger dog is by far the worst dog in any park. And if you tried to pass that off in Chicago, they'd freeze it and f*** you with it. It would never do. The Chicago dogs are so good. It's first off, there's no casing on the Dodger dog. It's just a weird meat scroll.
Are we sure it's
long?
Meat?
I don't even know that it's meat. I'm being generous when I say it's a scroll of meat. It's like someone just took some meat product and rolled it into a giant doobie. It hangs this far. By the way, here's how you know it's a horrible dog. They give you an extra 9 inches hanging out of each side of the bun. They don't give away good meat.
No.
So why is it hanging? And then the meat to bun ratio is completely screwed up, because if there's 4 inches hanging on each side of the bun, unless you're a porn star, you can't get any bun in the first two or three bites.
Yeah, and you got to put the mustard on the bun, on the dog, but there's no bun.
But there's
there.
No bun to even it out. I try to train myself in the bathtub by being able to, and it doesn't work.
You know what's sad is that
reflex.
I've always enjoyed the Dodger dog, but I think it's because I would literally eat any ballpark hot dog and think it was good.
They are coasting on the ballpark part of
they
it.
Totally are.
It's sort of like prison food. Like, what are you going to do? Starve? You got to do it.
Or like high school lunch or
something.
Yeah,
yeah. What are you going to do? It's even those carnation malted things with the wooden spoon. You wouldn't buy one of those outside of a stadium. You'd get a shake or a sundae.
I have two thoughts on this. One is that the Fenway Frank, which has always been one of the funniest names ever. We have the Fenway Frank and Pesky's Pole at Fenway Park.
Really?
Two of the
I was always a fan of the Ramrod.
Pesky's Pole or Fenway Frank. But Fenway Frank was always really good. And the hot dog fits the bun perfectly. And it almost like kind of melds into the bread. It's delicious.
L.A., and there's going to be a lot of people here that go, oh, you should try the dogs over and fill in the blank. They're nowhere as bad as the Dodger dog. The Dodger dog doesn't have a casing on it, so you don't get that snap and then the juice when you bite into it. It's just weird.
It's steamed
meatball.
Hot.
It's just bad. It's a horrible dog. So whoever takes over the Dodgers, get rid of that Dodger dog.
The best thing I've ever
Farmer
eaten,
John.
The best old school thing I've ever eaten in a stadium is in Fenway in right field. Past there, they have an Italian sausage, onion, and pepper place.
Oh.
And it's so good. And it's one of those places you can smell it as you're walking toward it, and your glands just start salivating.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I remember I went to Pac Bell in 2000. Mm-hmm. And this is when we were just, it was like back to the prison food mentality with ballpark food, where you just think, you don't even think about it. It's just the way it is. And Pac Bell, they would have these like, oh, there's a Mexican stand with little Mexican bowls. And and there's like a real pizza place with real slices, and
right.
here are like sausages and all these different things. And then like you go to the Milwaukee's new stadium, and same thing. Like there's real food.
Yeah.
And then it makes you angry when you're at the Staples Center, which our friends at AEG, you know, they've spent a lot of money like getting LA Live going,
right.
two NBA teams, an NHL team. They're trying to bring a football team here. And you go try to eat at the Staples, and it's like there's one section where they have like a place that makes real sandwiches.
Right.
Other than that, it's a catastrophe. And yeah. the people are the slowest people you could ever put.
Oh, I know.
It's just they're on it's 4 minutes per customer.
Yeah.
And it's like, isn't your goal to make money? Why wouldn't you want people that work behind the counter there just cranking it out?
I don't understand that. And first off, yeah, you know you have a captive audience.
Yeah.
So it's prison, basically. There's nothing you can do about it. And you know the food is bad at the stadium. I remember a few years ago when here's how you know it's horrible. You know, you've paid $150 for a ticket. You're going out on a Saturday night. And all of a sudden you go, hey, there's a Taco Bell and a Pizza Hut here. And your buddy's like, you're 45. Your buddy's like, yeah. And it's like, how excited would you be about Pizza Hut on any given Saturday night with your other 40-something-year-old buddies? And the answer would be zero interested in the Pizza Hut, except for when you're trapped in a prison of horrible food, the Pizza Hut seems like an oasis in this desert of horrible food.
It's Staples. It's McDonald's. McDonald's is like, packed because people are like, well, I know what I'm getting from McDonald's. Yeah.
Yeah. So they trap you, and then they essentially when they basically sell you this horrible food that would not, you know what the equivalent of this is? It's Fiesta Mix on an airline. Like, you would never eat Fiesta Mix. It's a bunch of salty dust with some orange
sticks. If I gave it to you right now, you would have been offended.
Give me some Funyuns or some Doritos or some Bugles or something. Give me some barbecued Lay's. Like, you'd never touch Fiesta Mix on the ground, but at 30,000 feet with a couple of beers in you, you're like, I guess I can pick through this and see if there's a peanut.
Well, do you think maybe there's some sort of economic reason why they do it this way? Like it's the cheapest possible food they could possibly put out.
It is, but I was on a flight the other day and they gave me something called Savory Mix. Right. No one knows what, by the way. They should be sued for using the word savory on the stale concoction of old pretzels and the sticks and the this and the that, and the salt that's dusty. And it's just one big pack of, it's just a bunch of sodium and carbohydrates and some orange dye number 11. And it's always stale. And the question is this, would this be consumed on the ground? If there was a vending machine and there's Doritos and Bugles and Lay's potato chips and Pringles potato chips and corn nuts. Would anybody, and smoked almonds, would anybody buy Savory Mix or Fiesta Mix? And then somebody will always say, listen, it's a business. It's about units. And I always answer this. All right, Savory Mix cost the airline next to nothing. But what would Doritos cost them if they bought 2 million units a year? 18 cents a bag. And if you added to the price of my ticket 18 cents, I wouldn't notice it. Like if my flight to Miami was $732.72 instead of 51 cents, you think I'd be bitching about
Dorito
it? Like, hey,
upgrade.
What the hell?
Yeah.
What's this? Where did this come from? Where's this extra 18 cents coming from? And how am I going to make
like
it up?
10 cents.
Right. So you could, for 10 cents, I'd get a sack of Doritos on that plane. Why not add it on? I can't figure it out.
Adam, when I run for the sports czar position in 2012,
please,
I'm going to revamp ballpark food.
Please, and let's get rid of the Dodger dog. It's horrible.
Or what
it's
about
the worst dog?
You know what else
I'm
getting rid of when I'm sports czar? The chicken fingers that are just 100% bread, and it's like, I think I saw a slight piece of chicken. It's you're basically just eating fried bread.
Yeah, chicken's got to be laughing their ass off looking at it like, none of me in there. Any of you in there? Not me. Look at that. It's a stick of deep fried bread.
With fries. You get the chicken and fries, and there's no meat. It's just two fried things together.
Yeah, and,
you
and dip they're it. Like, how can we make this less healthy? Oh, let's get some ranch going. Dip what is supposed to be the chicken into that thing. Yeah.
Let's go back to Dodgers for a second, though.
Mm-hmm.
You've been in California, in the LA area your whole life.
My whole life.
Have you ever seen the Dodgers hit rock bottom like this?
No, the Dodgers have always sort of been the Dodgers. Like the Rams have had their ups and downs. The Lakers normally pretty solid, but they've had their ups and downs as well. But the Dodgers are always just kind of the Dodgers. You know, it's Vin Scully and it's the Dodgers, you know. And now this whole McCord thing is fun. But it's funny because I don't care.
It was weird. Like 5 weeks ago, I was at this restaurant in Beverly Hills called Mastro's. And we had like an ESPN dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the same time when the Yankees-Tigers game, whatever the final game was of that playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going back and forth from this dinner, like we were sneaking out to see the score. And by the ninth inning, where it was like six of us just watching the last inning.
At the bar?
At the bar.
Right.
Also at the bar, sitting by himself, drinking a glass of wine, Frank McCourt.
Wow.
And nobody's talking to him, and everybody knows who he is, and it was really weird. And it made me think, like, this guy should want to hightail it out of L.A., right? Like, why would you want to live here at this point? Wouldn't you want to leave?
I don't know. That it's a weird thing. It's like Ben Roethlisberger driving around on a Kawasaki with no helmet through Pittsburgh. Like, are you interested in crazed people following you back to your house? Like, this is insane. Like, the whole thing about the celebrity motorcycle thing is Keanu Reeves rides a motorcycle, but he puts a full face helmet on. And
you don't know it's him.
Him and Brad Pitt just quietly get along without anyone knowing who it is, because you can't tell Brad Pitt from any other 5'11 guys, 175 pounds, on a Kawasaki. But like the no helmet thing. Yeah, I saw Sharon Stone driving through Pasadena in an Aston Martin with the top down, the convertible.
She's
Aston
an exhibitionist, that
Martin,
Sharon.
And she's just driving around, probably no underpants, skirt up overhead. And first off, I remember thinking to myself, if I were Sharon Stone's husband, I'd be like, are you nuts? I don't need more crazy people out front of our house. You understand? Because I'm sitting next to her at a signal, and I'm like, that's Sharon Stone. And then I thought, if I was a real weirdo, I would get her license plate, or I would just follow her back to her house. And look, what is she doing? And then you wonder, like, what is Ben doing? What is McCord doing? What is going on? And I realized, I think they like it.
They like the McCord just has to feel the eyeballs.
And then who is this? But in general, whenever you go to a nice restaurant, and I'm gonna make a list of guys that I am secretly jealous of, although I have much disdain for as well. The guy at the nice upscale restaurant, I'm not talking about a trucker who's sitting at a diner at a counter, in Wichita, who's got a long haul. And I'm talking about the guy who's sitting at an upscale, expensive restaurant, sitting at the bar alone, eating a $37 steak with a $14 glass of wine, just eating dinner. Just that alone dude at the bar.
You don't like that guy?
I love him and I hate him.
My thing is, you have to have a book or a magazine.
No. He's sitting alone. There's no game on.
Yeah.
He's kind of talking to the bartender. He clearly is of means. Like he's eating an expensive steak.
He's trying to meet somebody. He doesn't know how to get on Match.com.
What's he doing? What's going on at that bar? Is he there every night? Who is this mystery man? You want to? I gotta tell you what. I freaked out one time. We after my radio show at about 11 in the morning. The greatest thing about doing morning radio, is at 11 in the morning when you're done, you can go out to Laurie's and eat like prime rib.
Yeah.
Because you've been up since 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's like it's dinner time.
It feels like dinner.
Yeah. You can eat whatever you want at 11. And no one else is around.
Right.
The restaurants are empty. They're happy to see you. Before lunch, before dinner, after breakfast, we went in to that one of those Argentinian beef joints, where you hold the You have the doily red for more beef or green for more beef and red for. We got to get back there, by the way. Hmm. But we went into one of these places.
I retired from that place.
It'll kill you. But it's great. And there were like six of us, and we all just went in just to suck it up with the pork chops and beef and all kinds of stuff. we were the only ones in there because it's 11 o'clock. There's no one else that is going to eat that. One dude comes in. One dude sits down alone, flips the card up. Sits alone. I've never been to a weird all-you-can-eat beef place alone.
I've never even been to a buffet alone.
There's certain things that are weird. It's like going to see the Fast and the Furious alone. You know, it's like there's certain things that are group activities.
Agree.
It'd be like you just renting yourself a bouncy castle and jumping up and down alone in your backyard.
It is.
Again, I'm jealous of the guy. Like, my meal was ruined. Because I was like, we spent the entire time, like...
staring or trying to figure this guy out.
I came up with this elaborate scenario where he was a businessman, and he flew in from, like, Asia, and his clock was screwed up. So for him, it was, like, midnight.
7:30 at night. Yeah.
Because who else would be insane enough to come in alone and eat 8 pounds of beef at 11 in the morning? It's just it's a weird... I'm confused by the lone eater guy. Not at the counter at the diner, but at the upscale
place. Gotta bring a magazine. Yeah. Back to Sharon Stone for 1 second. This is one of my favorite Corolla theories. The woman that at some point in your life, it would have just been the most far-fetched thing ever that you could have hooked up with her.
Yes.
And then at some point, they hit a certain age, and maybe you are successful in some way.
Yes.
And the lines start going, and you start getting closer and closer, and then there becomes that point where you pass each other.
Yeah.
Sharon Stone, at age 53, you're almost there, I think. I think you're right there. I think she's here, and you're there.
It's an X. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't call you, but I just passed Linda Carter 4 days ago. Did you know that?
There should be a website where it just shows who you passed.
Who did you pass?
Linda Carter.
Yeah, like growing up. Like who? I got the whole cast of Knott's Landing. I passed them. Like I was almost 3 months.
I was on a plane with Jacqueline Smith when she was like 60 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was like in the vicinity.
Yeah. Well, it's tough because there's your Kathleen Turners of the world.
Well, yeah. Let's not talk about that.
Well, all I'm saying is theoretically, but what I'm saying is
too soon.
But I'm saying Jacqueline Smith has done a pretty good job of not letting you pass her.
Oh yeah,
she's
She has. Farrah Fawcett not as good of a job.
Yeah,
before she
right before, but
yeah, the point she let herself go the last 10 years.
The point is, I would love to see, and you got to make a case, like you know what I mean, like you got to go. You can't just go, I passed her. You got to go, here's how much money I make. Here's my station in life.
Here's my age.
Here's the car I drive. Yeah, we'd have to take a look at some tax returns and some... there'd have to be some judge that would go like, yeah. And even factor in what happened to her, how time has been to her.
Like Charlene Tilton, you're looking way down at Charlene Tilton.
I passed Charlene Tilton when I'm still doing the Man Show.
You passed her.
I can't recall.
You passed her at Kevin and Bean.
Yeah, second season of the Man Show.
Yeah.
No, and
Pamela Sue Martin, maybe like.
Yeah.
Maybe that took until.
Daisy Duke.
Daisy Duke.
Catherine Bach.
Not Heather Thomas though.
Not Heather. I haven't passed her yet, but I'm nipping at her heels.
And then there's
I don't know if you. I don't know if you got my email, but I passed Pia Zadora.
Oh, congratulations!
Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent.
I felt pretty good about that.
Back to the Dodgers, though.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it crazy that, like, right now we could go down to their box office and buy season tickets probably, like, 9 rows behind home plate?
Right. For 18
Like, this
bucks.
Was one of the storied baseball franchises and one of the storied sports franchises in general.
Yeah.
And has been, I don't know what the right word is, diminished, ruined, whatever, to the point that it's really a damaged brand. And I actually think this is the perfect time to buy the Dodgers. Look at all that land you get. You could do so much stuff with that land.
Chavez Ravine. I'll tell you.
You could put restaurants and bars, and you could do all underground parking or do some sort of giant parking structure.
You know who needs to buy the team?
Well, we need a Mark Cuban, but I don't think he wants to. Who?
Jody Maroney?
I don't know who that is.
He makes the sausages.
Oh, I like where you're going.
Yeah. Get that stupid Farmer John out of there.
I like it.
And let's get someone who can make a dog in there. That's all I care about.
Jody Maroney Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good idea.
Awesome.
Have you tried to take your kids to a baseball game?
No, not yet.
Baseball hasn't really translated to the younger generation.
Good.
It's three and a half hours, and they just don't have the time.
I took my kids, by the way, bought some good hot dogs, took my kids to the park, turned a corner with chili in my kids, by the way. They like the chili fries.
That's important.
I know it's not part of the master cleanse.
It's important.
But the point is, wouldn't it be awesome, though, if your wife said, hey, man, we're on a liquid cleanse, and she just handed you a goblet of chili, and you're like, wow.
This is the best diet ever.
Out better than I thought.
The chili diet.
Yeah, so, well, you were cleansing yourself last weekend. I was eating chili fries and chili dogs and the Chicagoan dog at the park, and I was at the old park that my Pop Warner team used to practice at, and except for there was now six co-ed soccer games going on simultaneously, and I thought, this is hallowed ground, because this is where the East Valley Trojans football team used to practice, and now we got all these little munchkins running around, kicking the ball. And then I ran into a friend of mine who I went to high school with, and her daughter was out there on the soccer team. And I was like, how's it going? And she's like, "Well, not so good this year." And I was like, "Whoa, why?" And she said, they haven't scored a goal. And I was like, and how far into the season are we? And she's like, we're like halfway into the season. I was like, no goals? Halfway into the season? She's like, yeah. And I was like, what are you doing? I mean, I can have my kid put on shiny shorts and run in a circle in the living room, right?
Yeah.
They just need to burn calories. They're not learning anything about life. I'm so tired of the youth soccer. I can't stand it. I always say this. I say, look, everyone's worried about their kid getting injured. Because I tell them, have your kid play Pop Warner football. I love dealing with a guy who played football because they're tough and they get it. And they're used to, by the way, blocking for other people.
You let your kid play Pop Warner football now?
Absolutely.
Really?
You know why? Because I say, like, a dislocated finger, that heals in 2 months, but being a is a lifetime sentence. And that's what we're creating. Just a bunch of weak, self-entitled wusses. Like, I don't need it. I'd rather them get a couple concussions. I mean, it's not like my kid's going to Harvard anyway. I'd rather them just have a tough spirit, you know? And that's what playing Pop Warner football does. The soccer's like, the coach is walking around on the field. The referee was a like 15-year-old chick. The kids are just running in circles. The ball just keeps going out of bounds. There's no equipment. There's no helmet. There's no pads. I mean, it's just...
Well, the problem with 6-year-old soccer is there's two types of kids. There's the type who actually likes sports and wants to get better at it and likes competing. And then there are the kids who are out there because their parents want them to play soccer and they have no interest in it at all.
And the parents are screaming, like, get the ball, go! Go, Dakota! Go! And it's like... cares. It's boring. It's so boring.
See,
they don't learn anything.
Baseball is the one that I don't think anybody should play until they turn like 11.
Yeah, that one's
this
no
T-ball,
good either.
It's like, first of all, you're not exercising.
No, you're standing around.
In left field for a half hour while the pitcher is trying to throw
eight-year-old
baseball. Well, this is after T-ball. They have like eight-year-old. There's somebody pitching.
Right.
And they don't have balls and strikes yet. It's just 20-minute at-bats. Like, how is this exercise?
I had this funny thing, and I realized, and it's happened to me a million times, that you don't really realize, which is, you know, at the pro level, when you're watching professional baseball and the ump's behind the plate and the guy throws the pitch and it's 3/8 of an inch outside the plate, the guy's like, ball, you know, take your base.
Yeah.
I forgot, because I played Pee Wee baseball, Little League baseball, and I played high school baseball. And the umps get better as you get older.
Right.
But it's mainly just out of laziness. Like, I was just walking around. I was just walking through New York a couple of weeks ago. And I was just walking alone with my earbuds on. I was chugging around on a Saturday. And I happened upon a Little League baseball game, right, in the middle of the city. And I started watching. And I realized, like, the strike zone was 7 foot to one bounce, you know? And it's like, I could tell the ref wanted to get the ump wanted to get the hell out of there.
It's just
and it's
keeping
like,
going.
You're sitting there, and it's like, it's two strikes and two balls, and it's like, the pitch comes in over the kid's head. It's like, victory, you're out of it. And I was like, what? Did he think that was a, and it was like, oh, good enough for the 9-year-old who was pitching, and this guy wanted to get home.
Well, here's a newsflash to the parents out there. If your kid is going to be good at baseball or football, they're going to be good regardless of whether they're playing at eight or not.
Yeah, the T-ball
you could never you could never touch baseball, a baseball glove or a bat until you're 16.
Yeah,
and be good at it right away if you're a good athlete.
Half the
half
the tight ends in the NFL now just play basketball in college. I mean, you hear about these guys, you know, Christian Okoye didn't know what a football was until his, you know, 19th birthday, and then someone took him off the track and handed him this.
I think
thing,
there's some sports you have to start playing early, like I think hockey.
Yeah, because you got to skate.
You got to like you got to just know everything by the time you're six, or else it's not going to happen.
If you can't skate, you can't play. And you
volleyball might be a little bit like that. There's a whole. Just a rhythm to it that I think would be tough to pick up.
I still need to find the guy who makes indoor volleyball shoes and have him explain to me sufficiently why there needs to be a separate shoe for the exact same court that the basketball game was played on the night before. And well, why this isn't the biggest racket in the world.
I think it's a racket.
I'm going to blow the lid off this indoor volleyball
shoe. You
want to
talk about
business.
Racket? What about gymnastics?
Yeah.
Little kids' gymnastics.
Yeah.
Anyone who's remotely a good athlete, you know, like, my daughter was doing gymnastics once a week. My daughter's a good athlete.
Yeah.
And they were like, they took us aside, like, hey, you know,
sure.
Your daughter, she could be really good at this, you know, if she comes 3 days a week and whatever, like, you know, this could really go great for her, go next level. And I'm like, how much is that going to cost?
And what
like
is
$400 a week or something? What's the next level? Why would I want her to do this?
The next level is an eating disorder, body dysmorphic disorder,
torn knee ligaments. Like, oh, that sounds great. Yeah, let me start having her do that more.
An A cup, no time for dating.
And
I mean,
also,
what
like,
the hell?
What do you want your kid to specialize in one sport when they're under like 12? Don't you want your kids to just play stuff? They're kids.
Also. At what point in life does rhythmic gymnastics come in handy? Like, it's not like, hey, I got this stick with this ribbon on it, and I can use it in a real-world application.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at least if you're going to get your kid into something, get him into judo or mixed martial arts or something.
Everything.
Or in case some guy comes at him at the bar, he can throw down. You know, diving, tumbling, gymnastics. No. Anyway, forget about soccer. Pop Warner football. That's what the kids need to play.
Oof.
So they get injured.
They heal.
They're going to get injured anyway. I mean, who cares whether it's falling on a tree or, you know, busting a wedge on a kick return.
The other sport that if you get them in early, they just never lose it is golf.
Yeah.
You learn how to swing a golf club by the time you're six. That just stays. That's in your DNA and in your head. Same with tennis.
I got to.
You can hit a forehand when you're six. You know, in the backhand, you're gonna have the same thing when you're 20.
I'm gonna tell. By the way, that is a good point because there are guys that are good at golf, and no one should give a crap about golf. I mean.
They're people that usually started playing when they were like 8, 9, 10.
But here's the thing about golf that's interesting, which is I'm good at softball, but it doesn't help me my career. You know what I mean?
Well, like, celebrity softball games, I think it helps.
It doesn't move the needle.
Hasn't moved
much.
The needle that
not,
much for you?
Not as much as
that
I did.
That 3-for-4 performance at Chavez
I hit two dingers, and I got no love for it last time I did it. And the point is it's not moving the needle as much as I'd like. But the thing about golf, other sports at the sort of less than pro level don't really help you in the workplace.
Yeah.
But golf, like golf
helps.
It's always one of those things where it's like, yeah, that guy's not very good and he's kind of a douchebag, but he's a scratch golfer. He's a really good golfer. Like, I've had that all the time where it's like, you know, that guy's a good golfer. It's like, so what? He's my business manager.
It's like our agent, Baby Doll Dixon.
He's a good golfer. It's like, so what? He can use a stick and hit a ball on the weekend. What's that have to do with being a manager or an agent or an accountant or a publicist
it's good for
or something? I'm telling you, guys are like, you know what it's like? It's like having a big honker. Like, once the word gets out, like, guys have a weird kind of quiet respect for you. Like, let's not fire that guy.
I've been actually thinking about it. I retired from golf when I was 24 because I had a temper problem with the golf course, so I had to quit.
Sure.
Now I'm calmer. I think I'd be fine. But I always kind of get jealous of this secret golf world. Like, you know, like our age of Baby Doll James Dixon, he will come to L.A. and he'll be like, oh yeah, Riviera, I gotta play Bel Air. Like, they know all these weird things that nobody else knows. And it's like,
get him
play
talking
Bel Air
about his golf clubs, because that's a good one.
Like, I got a new graphite driver.
Just bragging about his golf clubs. But he's like, but it's funny. The thing that's funny, when I said to him, I said, oh, so like, are you going to Maui? Are you going to golf there? Or when you come to LA, you're going to golf, or you go to Palm Springs, you're going to golf. And then I go, how's it work? So you have to ship your golf clubs to Florida? Baby, I got a set in every city. Like, it's like, and guys used to brag about keeping a woman in every city.
Yeah.
He brags about having golf clubs in every city.
Yeah.
Like, I have they're stashed in a hermetically sealed in a temperature controlled humidor in Maui, and then there's one in Palm Springs. It's got a set for Florida. It's got sets everywhere just waiting for him. So when he shows up, his golf clubs are waiting for him.
Unbelievable. It's a whole community of, you're either psychotic about it or you're like us where you may play.
I would try to describe it to Dr. Drew every once in a while, but you can't tell a guy with three kids who loves his family and has nine jobs about spending 17 hours on a Sunday walking around a golf course. Like, he was like, when do they do this? I'm like, just do it on the weekend. Like, it takes so long. Like,
that's a good defense for our wives. We don't play golf. Expensive. Yeah. Chews up the weekends. Gone for 6 hours on a Saturday or Sunday. I'm going to start using that. It could be worse. I play golf. I don't play golf.
I have found that the bad things that I don't do pale in comparison to the good things that I don't do. You know what I mean? Like, I've tried that. You see, at least, hey, I could be so-and-so's husband. That guy, you know, because I get I like it, you know, like when it turns out one of her friends' husbands was cheating or not paying support or doing or whatever. I always go, I'm not that. Yeah, it's kind of like I'm a C-minus student, but I have an older brother who's in juvie. And so I can go, he doesn't got you. He gets report cards from the warden. He goes, no, you understand? So my C-minus, not so bad in comparison. But
We never talked about the L.A. football stadium. I feel like you have to pick sides here. Would you rather it be downtown L.A. or in the city of industry?
Downtown. Yeah, I don't know where they're going to tear down the convention center.
Yeah.
And
they have it all planned out.
They just built that convention center not that long ago.
Yeah,
or
it's
they
like
just
20
added
years
on
old.
To
yeah.
it.
Yeah, well, the stadium would be the convention center.
You know what I like about the convention center?
What?
Sometimes when you're driving out of town and you get to, like, you're going to the city of industry, you will pass big signs about what's going on. Like, you think the convention center has, like, the car show and the music show, but you'll see, like, Hemp Fest 2012 or the Eroticon, whatever. And you're like, well, couldn't I get a vibrator mail order? Like, what do I need to surround myself with like-minded weirdos
all
for?
Those
like,
con, the con movement is in. Comic-Con started all these conventions now.
Okay, so I like smoking weed, or I'm really into Jenna Jameson. That's fine. Do I need to hang out with a bunch of dudes who like Jenna Jameson? I thought the whole point was this was kind of a solo
Maybe
gig,
you and I should start PodCon.
It would make more
sense. So you have a podcast too? Great.
It would make more sense than, you mean you chronically masturbate as well? Well, same here. Well, up top, my brother. Like, I thought that was the kind of stuff.
Early 80s stuff or current?
I'm retro. I'm old
retro.
I got a throwback towel. It's weird. And then I thought the whole point, like, if you're gonna get a marital aid or a French tickler or something, I thought the whole point is you kind of put on some sunglasses and went into a CD store and looked over your shoulders and see if anyone went to high school with, and then you quietly bought it and brought
it home. Those stores don't exist anymore, right?
I think they're still around.
Really?
Yeah.
Do candy stores still exist?
Oh, yeah.
Like those old 70s candy store that have a ton of candy? Like, why would anyone go into those?
You know where you find those? At the airport.
Record albums?
The airport is filled with stuff.
Oh, yeah. Airport doesn't count, though.
Oh, okay. Well, then no.
Like,
the thing that was always funny about the sex shop ones is the guy always stood on like a 3-foot riser. So it's like talking to the Wizard of Oz, except for the guy had a double chin and you were talking about vibrators, but he would be like, Is the Ron Jeremy one take C batteries or D batteries? And the guy's standing up. I don't know why the guy had to be 4 foot higher than everyone else down there. I guess it was to keep an eye on everyone in the back or something. Yeah. It was always a weird thing.
I remember in the DMV in Boston, right next to the DMV was this big sex shop.
No windows.
No windows, but, you know, the DMV, the way it's a little more efficient now, but in the 90s and early 2000s, not as efficient.
Sure.
And you'd be there and it'd be like, yeah, well, you take this car and it'd be like, yeah, it'll be about 2 hours. So your choices were,
what are you going to do?
Do I sit in this lobby? There's no Blackberries yet, nothing like that. There's just basically have so. Do I sit in here? Or do I go in this really weird dark sex shop next door? And obviously you go in the sex shop.
Well, even if it was a pet store.
Right. Whatever the store is, you're going in. It's a mall, whatever.
I had the
most brilliant placement of a sex shop, I think, ever.
I one of the most traumatic experiences of my life.
Traumatic ones too.
Yeah, this is really.
You're friends with Ray Oldhouse.
This is way more traumatic than that. There was a place, maybe it's still there. It was like on Western off of Santa Monica, a great part of town. And it was just like, you know, sex barn, like it, you know, had everything. Oh. Like it was like mega store. And I was living with my girlfriend in Hollywood in like a little one bedroom apartment or something. And, you know, this no internet, no nothing back then. This is back in the old school VCR days. And for some reason, I got off of work like 3 hours early, and I remember just thinking, I'm going to go grab a tape from one of these, this place. And it was like 2 p.m, and I walked in, and when I walked in the middle of an argument of a guy who was trying to return, like a or something, and the guy was arguing with him, and he's like, sir, once it leaves the store,
right? Once it leaves the store.
I'd be like trying to return a burrito after two days.
All sales are final.
Final.
Literally final.
That's literally why we power them up before they leave the store, because there ain't no warranty on a. And the guy was like arguing, and I was like trying to steer clear, and I made my way over to like the bargain bin, you know, I was looking through some stuff, and I got a movie, and the door was right on Western, and there's no windows or anything. It's just a door. And then there's sidewalks about 5 foot wide, and then there was super busy Western Boulevard.
Oh, no.
And also, the place is pitch black inside. It's like you barely read the title of the movie you're buying, you know?
Yeah.
And then when you walk out, it's like Southern California, August, you know, 2 p.m. And I opened the door with my movie, and there was a school bus parked right against the curb, And because the place had like purple neon, you know, flashing and all that, and every single one of those fourth graders had their nose pressed against the window, like I was doing that, and it was stopped, like just lined up perfectly with the door, and they were just the signal, the cars had backed up and stuff, and they were just waiting there in the right turn. And I just opened the door, and every single kid in that bus, I mean, they were from the other side of the bus, had gone to this side of the bus. It was like, and they just like, and I was just greeted by a wall of 9-year-olds, and I just remember thinking, my God, you've bottomed out, Ace Man. And they were like laughing and pointing and screwing at me and stuff. It was a simpler time, but it was very traumatic. But thank God I was just a carpenter.
Yeah,
I know.
All right, do your fake movie.
Yeah. Oh, first I have to say my Julianne Hough Seacrest joke.
Oh, yeah. Say it.
Because everyone says to me, because she was my Dancing with the Stars partner.
Right.
And she says, and people would come up to me and they go, do you realize Julianne Hough is dating Ryan Seacrest? And I'd go, I didn't know Ryan Seacrest. Oh, wait, I screwed the joke up.
All right, start again.
We'll clean it up.
People go up to you and...
We'll clean up in post. Okay. So they go, do you know Julianne Hough is dating Ryan Seacrest? And I'd go, Julianne Hough's a lesbian? That was always my joke. Anyway.
Fake movie.
Just One of the Gays.
Mm.
All right, here's the deal. Born from the truth. Torn from the headlines.
Mm.
There's an all-gay, or they're talking about making an all-gay school in Chicago because the gay kids were getting bullied. And instead of being bullied in your tough public school, if you made an all-gay school, you couldn't get bullied. So an all-gay school in Chicago because of the bullying problem. But obviously, it's one of the best
schools.
Is
this a real story?
I remember hearing about this in the news a few years ago. They were talking about it. I don't know if they did it or not. But the point is the all-gay school, you know, would have a better arts program, better lunches, better curriculum. Like, it'd be a better school. Let's be honest. So Shia LaBeouf. Getting a little long in the tooth, but Shia LaBeouf.
I like how you always work Shia into this.
I got to work Shia. He's a troubled kid, and he's from the wrong side
of
the tracks.
Yeah.
And his mom realizes the only shot this kid's got at a good education, because he's getting in fights in his tough South Side Chicago school, is to enroll in the all-gay school.
Mm.
But, of course, he has to pretend he's gay. So his mom's like, you're now, and she does a whole makeover on him, and a whole, he's dapper now, and he's going in it. He can't stand it, because he's a tough, streetwise hoodlum who has to gay it up all the time.
So it's a little like in School Ties, when Brendan Fraser had to pretend that he wasn't, that he was Catholic, basically. He hid the Star David, all that stuff.
Almost exactly like that, but with gay. So that's LaBeouf, pretending he's gay. Now, Dakota Fanning.
Now, again, why don't you use her sister, Elle Fanning, for this?
Elle?
Yeah, you can use Elle Fanning. You can pass the torch to Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning, who also comes from the wrong side of the tracks, and mom, single mom, also wants her to get a good education, too, says, you got to gay it up. It's an all-boys gay school.
Oh.
You got to pretend you're a gay boy, you know, a la Hillary Swank.
So this is like a little bit like Just One of the Guys with Joyce Heiser in the 80s, only she's pretending she's a gay male high school student.
I don't make new movies. I do what P. Diddy does with songs. I take three old songs and just put them together. Yeah. So we do that. Now you got Shia LaBeouf. He's not gay. He don't like the gays. He's a tough kid from the streets.
Right. He needs to learn a lesson.
He's going to learn a lesson. And you got Elle Fanning. And they, you know, of course, they're sitting next to each other, and neither one of them really wants to be there. But they realize you're getting a top-notch education, but there's a weird attraction.
Oh.
And so now LaBeouf is like, I don't know why I'm attracted to that dude, but I like that dude, and he's freaking out because 10 minutes ago he wasn't gay.
Yeah.
Now he's thinking he's gay.
Right.
And of course, Elle Fanning is looking at LaBeouf and going, it's too bad he's not straight. Because we could really, I know I'm a chick. I'd really be into this dude, but this dude likes other dudes.
Right.
So they don't know it. And they find themselves spending a lot of time together.
Right.
And like,
there's,
you know,
when
they brush up against
study one
each
night,
other.
They fall asleep, they wake up.
Yeah,
somebody's head's
a weird moment where they wake up in each other's arms, you know? And of course, we have the moment where she pulls the hair out of the bun. You know, does that.
Yeah.
And then, of course,
the wig comes off. You could do it that way.
Love is found, and they both go to an Ivy League school. But the point is that weird moment where Shia starts finding himself being attracted. And he learns a lot about not only himself, but life through this experience.
Have you ever thought about merging this with one of your other great ideas, Gay Eye?
Ooh. Gay eye.
What was the gay eye one?
Well,
was,
gay eye.
It was an eye transplant, but he was given the eye of.
Well, listen, I've seen enough movies where the guy gets the heart of a serial killer.
Right.
And then he becomes a serial killer.
Or he gets the serial killer's hand.
Yeah.
That's
and that becomes
one.
A killing hand. Yeah. Even the eye. If you get the eye of a serial killer.
Yeah, then
you
become a serial killer.
Stop giving out parts from serial killers. It's evidently not working out nicely. In the donor program.
Yeah.
But you get whatever you get, then that becomes you.
Yeah.
So this guy, he's like a semi-racist guy. He works at a transmission shop. He lives in Kentucky. You know, he's into blue-collar comedy and the NASCAR and all stuff. He gets in a horrible accident.
Loses an eye.
Hot transmission fluid. He gets the eye. Guy bought it in a moped accident in Antigua. And he gets the eye, the one gay eye. And so it's like he's just sitting there, and he's like, one minute he's looking at his chick's rack, and the next minute the eye starts wandering over to like the dude's crack. And then he's like, and his best buddy is going to be Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
And he's going to be like, get her done. And he's going to be like, Larry, you've been working out?
Yeah.
And Larry's like, what the heck? We're going fishing, son.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's redecorating his trailer, and it's all. And he can communicate. All of a sudden, his girlfriend is like, God, you're so sensitive now, and you're listening. And we're going candle shopping together, and he's taking a me day, and his eye has turned his life around. Yeah, I could combine Just One of the Gays with Gay Eye.
It would be hard. I don't know if it's ever been tried. You're basically taking two fake movies and you're merging them into one larger,
it could be done.
Bigger fake movie.
It could be done.
We also, I got a million emails about this that somebody really did try to create the real life pedophile, and I don't remember if we talked about this on the podcast.
Yeah,
but
I saw it.
People are really excited that this pedophile, that might be your legacy.
It's intriguing. It'd be nice.
It's a good way to go out.
It'd be nice to remember.
That might push you past Sharon Stone.
Yeah. Oh, the X. Yeah, we're crossing. Yeah.
Hold on, I got to read the dates that you have coming up here.
Oh, you know what? I'm coming out to the East Coast, Philly and Boston and all sorts of places like that. I think D.C. Here's the thing.
Hold on, I got him.
Yeah.
So December 1st, Keswick Theater in Philly. December 2nd, Royal Oak Theater in Detroit.
We'll show gay eye when I do this,
yes.
By the way. I have it.
December 3rd, Saturday, two shows at the Park West Theater in Chicago.
Oh, good venue.
December 4th, the Paramount Theater in Denver. God, they're flying you around.
Yeah.
Check out adamcarolla.com.
Yeah, for all the dates.
For all the dates.
Check out the app. It's all free.
And also, your live show is really fun. I don't know how you do that. You have, like, probably 30 hours of content you could just crank out at any point now with the slideshow.
Sort of like a band that has too many songs, so we just mix and match the set up and have fun. And Bill did it. It was great. Fun, right?
That was fun. I would do that again.
Well, next time
I actually get sad when I have to leave because you only have the guests for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Well, when we're coming to Anaheim like December 15th or something like that, I'm doing the Grove, so maybe you come out.
All right. And Mike August got married. That's the last thing.
Yes, he did.
He and his and our agent gave a 25-minute speech about how cheap he was. That's the Brad's horrified family.
Yeah, at my house.
Thought he was joking and then came to the sad realization at about 20-minute mark that he wasn't joking, and their daughter had married a total cheapskate.
Yes.
It was pretty good. Adam Carolla, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.